From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the closing market report. It is the 26th day of November, 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. The folks at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County will be along to look at the cash grain market. Gary Schnitke, farm management specialist here on this campus in the College of Agricultural, Consumer, Environmental Sciences, has penned an article for the Farm Doc Daily website that looks at next year's potential net incomes. We'll take that up with him, and we'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast today with the guys up at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, as usual for a Monday afternoon here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by Justin Wood and Paul Stevens of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123.
In Chicago on this Monday afternoon after Thanksgiving, December soft red winter wheat on its close up 2.5 cents at $5, or rather $8.50 and a quarter cents. The March contract there at 8.56 even for the soft red, up 3.5 in July of next year at 8.60 and a quarter, up 6 cents. That, of course, the harvest month. The Kansas City hard red finished the July contract at $9.09 and 3/4 of a cent, up 9 3/4. Those are closes as well from the corn pit in Chicago. December corn on its close up 1 3/4 at 7.47 and a quarter. The March at 7.51 and a half, 1 3/4 higher. May futures up 2 cents at 7.48 and 3/4. In July at 7.40 and a quarter, up 2 3/4. December corn at 6.28 and a quarter. These are 2 3/4 of a cent higher on a close near the end of the trading day in Chicago. From the bean pit, nearby contract for the soybeans in the January is at 14.24 and a half, up 5 3/4 for the day. March at 14.10 and a half, up 7 1/2, in the May at 13.89 and 3/4, 7 cents higher. July soybeans, 13.82 and a quarter, up 6 cents. And next year's November contract at $12.94 and a half, up 9 3/4. Bean meal futures at 4.32.50, up 3.90 on the nearby bean oil, down a penny at $49.03 on the afternoon. Feeder cattle in the November contract at 143.40, up 8 cents. January, 7 cents lower at 147.17 and a half. And the live cattle finished the December at 128.30, down 65 cents. This is Illinois Public Media. Here's what some of the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby contract for the crude oil trading the January 53 cents lower at $87.75. The heating oil in the December contract, or diesel fuel, at $3.04 and 3/4. That's down 3 cents on the afternoon. And the rest of the marketplace, the RBOB gasoline, 1 7/10 lower, $2.72 and 6/10 of a cent. And natural gas trading at $3.72 and 9 cents. That's down 17 2/10 of a cent. And ethanol futures are up 1 3/10 today at $2.40 and a half cent for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service from the Urbana-Champaign area. A 20% chance of snow after 3 o'clock this afternoon. Mostly cloudy with a high near 41. Of course, that must be dropping with a north wind at about 11 miles an hour at a gust all the way to 17. And then tonight, mostly cloudy, a low of 22 degrees this evening, a north wind at 6 to 10, gusting to 15. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny skies, a high of 37. North winds at about 6 miles an hour. They'll come out of the south-southwest later in the afternoon. Mostly clear in the evening with a low of 24 degrees. Again, that south-southwest wind continues at 5 to 7 miles an hour. And Wednesday, sunny skies, a high near 43. West winds at 5 to 7. They'll be light and variable in the afternoon. Wednesday night, mostly clear, a low of 30 degrees. And then on Thursday, mostly sunny skies, a high near 48. Thursday evening, mostly cloudy and 35. Friday, sunny and 50. Friday night, mostly cloudy and 41 degrees. Saturday, cloudy and a high near 55. Chance of rain on Saturday evening, mostly cloudy, a low of 45. And by the time we get to Sunday, we should see partly sunny skies and a high near 56 degrees. We'll have a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with the folks at Chesapeake Energy. They're looking down from the 23rd floor of the Boeing building in Chicago.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is the first trading day. Well, not the first trading day, but it's really the first big trading day after the Thanksgiving weekend, a Monday afternoon. On the phone line with us is Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. I suppose that Friday wasn't really much of a trading day in Chicago. What did you see there Friday and then overnight last night and through today, today?
Well, we saw Friday's trade hold the grain complex together, some higher closes. The outside markets were supportive, but Friday's trade there sort of finished off the week here in somewhat low volume as on a positive note, suggesting that the market should try to work higher here over the near term. Overnight last night, we started out a little lower and was able to regain the bullish enthusiasm through the night and carry it through today. There are several fundamental events taking place to give reason that the grain complex should be a supportive feature on its own, barring no outside major disaster anywhere from the standpoint of demand, weather, and those being the two big supporting feature, not only here in the U.S., but throughout the world, Todd.
You know, the market was a bit higher than it ended the day, at least for corn and for soybeans. Why did why was it not able to hold on to those gains that were, well, I think, maybe as much as a dime, maybe a bit higher for soybeans, and five saw 7 cents at one time for corn futures?
Well, it came in. The funds bought over 4,000 contracts of corn, 3,000 beans, 2,500 oil, 1,000 meal, 1,600 wheat contracts going into midday. We banged up against some the upper end of the trading range, just kind of lost the bullish enthusiasm. The market was able to sort of back and fill. We had confirmation of some soybean oil sales. We're waiting some confirmation here as we move through the week of some additional bean sales to Asia. We'll see if those announcements occur or not. Then, too, we'll see what the conditions state by state on the wheat crop produces here, because basically we're looking at probably the third worst drought in the western Corn Belt. Even though we've received some good moisture here this fall, guys out west continue to miss the moisture.
Yeah, so is wheat the linchpin that we need to watch at least for a while as to whether or not the marketplace is able to hold through, I don't know, the end of December? I don't know whether it would be any longer than that or not.
Well, I think it's a three-way tie here. The wheat, of course, from weather, not here in the U.S., but other regions of the world, moisture can help that crop as we move down the road. But there are reports that moisture has been such a deficit that some of the wheat has gone ahead and died, but we'll see how that unfolds. The most popular spread continues to be long KC, short the Chicago wheat July. I imagine that spread is going to maintain its momentum here until we get into this spring, but definitely wheat's probably going to find a support in the pullbacks. And the soybean complex, not just the beans on the western southern hemisphere, but soybean oil. We've already met 110% of the USDA export projections, and we still have almost all the marketing year to go in front of us. So that is the bullish feature in the soybean complex, whereas bean oil is no longer a byproduct, but a primary crushing product that the world's eager to buy here with these record huge sales we've seen in the soybean oil complex. Then, of course, the corn side of the equation, thirdly, which is going to help support the complex, is the story ongoing that corn's going to be very, very tight as we move into that January, February, March time window on the world scale. So those all three commodities, I think, are going to work together in tandem as we go into at least first of the year, Todd.
Why so much demand for soybean oil, and does it spill over into all of the vegetable oils?
It has. The big one we need to watch on the world scale will be the world vegetable oil market. You've got several oils there. Most popular is Malaysia, palm oil, per se. But no, China's been aggressively buying the bean oil, feeling its fair value. You know, they've already booked a bunch of beans and have been shipping and taking those beans. They'll continue to buy beans, but they just suggest that the demand is strong in Asia. Chinese numbers are looking better for their economy, so we're looking for that Chinese economy to start showing some positive signs. Look for them to remain a huge buyer in the world market as they continue to gather inventory.
Anything of note for the livestock sector?
Back and filling, the livestock sector continues to remain robust in here. You know, as long as corn doesn't go above $8 and stay above there, it still looks profitable or encouraging for the livestock sector. One thing we need to watch is Japan. The Japan economy is slowing down. They are a big corn buyer of ours. They are a huge meat buyer of ours, and that could probably keep a lid on meat exports if Japan continues to experience a little economic growth concerns.
Kurt, thanks so much.
Very good. Take care.
You too. Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Monday afternoon. If you'd like to hear Kurt again, you can always do that on our website at willag.org, on our mobile website at m.willag.org, or this afternoon at about 3:15 Central Time, USA. We'll have it posted not only to the websites, but to our phone line as well. You can dial that in at 217-333-3434.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, Gary Schnitke, Farm Management Specialist from the U of I is here to look at next year's potential incomes. He's run some numbers for us for net farm incomes in 2013. Why don't you lay out the farm situation that you used, Gary, first? Where is it? How big is it? And how does it yield?
Yeah, this is a typical northern central Illinois farm. It has 1,200 acres, 120 acres are owned, 360 acres are share rent, and 720 acres are cash rent at $300, and its expected yields are 187 bushels for corn and 54 bushels for soybeans, and we used cost from our 2013 crop budgets.
And you have a debt of what?
$480,000 worth of debt on this farm, and that's a typical amount for a farm this size.
Why is that important to include in these numbers?
We want to get sort of a commercial farm, look at what our typical farm is, and that matches up, that this demographic pretty much matches up what our average crop farm looks like in our FBFM database.
And so it would tell you at the end of the day what net income is then, because you have to take off the interest and payments.
Yep.
And such.
Absolutely. We project revenue, including crop revenue, government payments, crop insurance if we get yields or prices low enough, and then include all the cost, fertilizer, seed, chemicals, overhead, drying and storage, and interest, and all the cost.
Okay, so go through the numbers for me. What do the net incomes look like?
All right, so we started out here with a 580 corn price and a 1240 soybean price, which are right at where you could contract for 2013 delivery. That results in $291,000 of net farm income, and that would be above our average, and that would be a very good income. So current prices look at or project a pretty good income for the coming year. We back that down to 540 and 1180. More conservative, but still very good prices. We would be looking at something like $229,000 of income. Anything where corn prices are above $5, we're looking at some sort of income above $160,000 for this farm. obviously, incomes can be get worse. The worst case scenario would be $43,000, and that results from either low yields or low prices. What happens is that crop insurance kicks in, and again, we assumed a RP in purchase at an 80% coverage level, assuming a 610 projected corn price used to set crop insurance guarantees and a 1270 soybean price.
So when you do those numbers, there are places where you end up with a $43,000 income, but there must be a net loss on the farm to begin with prior to the time that the government crop insurance is used.
If crop insurance wouldn't be making payments, those incomes could go negative. So if we get yields or prices down low enough, we would have negative incomes, but our RP crop insurance is going to make payments in those cases.
So the RP crop insurance, and this would be used with the adjustment for the last 10 years of your yield, so it would be the higher yield as well. But if it depends a lot on the coverage, because even at different coverage levels, you really begin to come up with some serious losses with the crop insurance in place.
Yeah, and just to give you a feel for that, these are worst-case incomes caused by lower gross revenue. The worst-case revenue, if we have an 85% coverage level, would be $92,000. 80% coverage level would result in $43,000. And going down to 70% coverage level, we could have a minus $53,000 loss. That would happen if we had close to normal yields. That would be at very, very low prices that $53,000 loss would occur. But it is still possible to have losses at a 70% coverage level RP insurance.
And these are all at $6.10 on the corn crop insurance and $12.70 on the soybeans, and then something below $4.40, I suppose, for corn at the actual price.
Yep, that at the 80% coverage level, if we have a 610 projected corn price, that $43,000 worst case income results if we have corn prices below 440 if we have normal yields, and the soybean price is 910 if we have, again, normal yields.
Makes the case for crop insurance, that's for sure.
Yeah, it also does point out that 610 and 1270 soybean price, projected price, are important. If we lower those, again, we can see much lower worst-case incomes. But just to give you an example, going from 610 corn price down to 570 and 1270 soybean projected price down to 1210, we get down to from 43,000 down to minus 5,000. So that projected prices are important, and that February settlement price period is key.
Makes next year, like this year and all years, I suppose, scary when you look at them from the front end, and they're always that way for the farm.
Yep, and we're hoping that we can at least carry some of these higher prices that we've had through the drought in the later part of 2012 through early part of 2013.
All right, thanks so much, Gary.
Thank you, Todd.
Gary Schnitke is a farm management specialist at the University of Illinois. You can read more from him on the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. This particular article is entitled 2013 Net Farm Income Projections. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Hey, have you signed up for the Farm Doc Ag Econ Summits? Those are the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. You can find them on the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. They are the 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th, and 14th of December. If you have not yet signed up, probably ought to go there and do that right now. Sign up closes at the end of this week. The Ag Economist and I will be on the road across the state of Illinois at a venue probably really close to you over those 5 days. It's not expensive, and it's a great program to come and hear what the Ag Economist have to say about the marketplace. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. It is a Monday afternoon. Amy Murray at the Andersons right here in Champaign County is on the phone line to take up the cash grain market with us now. Hi, Amy. How are you today?
I'm good, Todd. How about yourself?
I'm really good, although I read the forecast that said we might have snow this afternoon. That was the first time I'd actually seen that word in the forecast, and it took me back. Only a 20% chance in the Urbana-Champaign area, but it tells us the weather's getting colder, and I suppose that means producers will be thinking about either keeping the door shut or moving some corn really quickly before they have to be cold, trying to do so. Did you see much movement at all today?
You know, we really haven't seen a ton, but I don't know that we're going to see a ton for the rest of the year. Like I said, I think a lot came to town this fall, so don't know how much activity we're going to actually see post-harvest compared to usual this
year. Can you take me through some of the things you're probably discussing there? For instance, the Mississippi River and the problems they're having with it if they get her shut down. What does that do for your basis levels here? What kind of problems does it cause, if any, for the Andersons? I suspect since you're doing most things by rail, it doesn't really matter too much. But tell me about it.
Sure. Really, like you said, it's probably not going to affect us too terribly on our basis here, especially since we're on the NS rail line as well as the CN. So the NS can take us to the southeast. So that shouldn't affect us too much. You know, if we were strictly on the CN, then that might affect us a little bit more given Gulf activity. But we should be okay basis-wise. I think we'll remain strong.
Does it concern anybody with the Andersons that the Mississippi is so very low?
Obviously, yes, it's a concern. We don't like to see that. But locally here, I think we'll be okay.
All right.
Regardless of the situation.
Basis levels remain fairly strong, or are they just holding steady as we make our way through the month of November?
You know, we have been holding steady and firm at where we were, but we actually did improve our basis today nearby on corn. We've recently improved our new crop values as well, so we're looking at strong basis levels.
Yeah, and those are a reflection of a call from where, the southeast or someplace else?
Southeast, and I think all over you're gonna see that. I think we had talked before about processor markets in the area, kind of looking for corn outside the area, so that's actually going to drop the strength locally. But with the shortage of supply that we have out there, I think we're going to continue to see strength from all different markets.
For soybeans as well?
Soybeans as well. Different reasons. I think on soybeans, we're looking at questionable weather in South America. You know, they're still far away from making their crop. So obviously not knowing what the supply out there is going to be from our Southern Hemisphere friends, that should keep things strong in the short term anyway.
Amy, what are your bids for the day?
Sure. Right now, cash corn, we're at 762. December delivery, 764. January corn, 771. New crop, fall of 13 at 604, January 14 at 617. Cash beans today at 1420, December 1425, January also 14 and a quarter, new crop of 13 at 1271, January 14 at 1282. Cash wheat today is at 829 and new crop July is at 826.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Amy Murray is with the Andersons, located right here in Champaign County, Illinois. Joins us on the Closing Market Report on this Monday afternoon. Back in just a couple minutes, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with the folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
It's National Cake Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1836, John McAdam died. He invented McAdam pavement for roads. And by the way, the macadamia nut was also named for him. In 1867, J.B. Sutherland patented the refrigerated railroad car. The first cars had double walls, roof, and floor, and the space between was filled with sawdust, felt, or other suitable materials. Ice changers at each end of the car carried about 800 pounds of ice, and hanging flaps were designed to maintain air circulation. In 1876, Willis Carrier was born, an American inventor. He created air conditioning, and his rational psychometric formula is still essential to this day for air conditioning engineers. His first system controlled temperature and humidity in a Brooklyn printing plant. And in 1915, W. Attlee Burpee died, an American seed man. He was the founder of the world's largest mail order seed company in 1876. Just 18 years old, Burpee started his company in Philadelphia with a passion of plants and a mother willing to lend him $1,000. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
This is the closing market report from Illinois Public Media. It's the 26th day of November. On the phone line from Chicago, Illinois, and Chesapeake Energy is Mark Russo, meteorologist. Thanks so much for taking the time with us, Mark. Can you go back through what happened over the weekend and what things look like for Thanksgiving, and then take us forward right here in the Midwest?
Yeah, we certainly saw a decrease in temperatures, a dramatic decrease in temperatures over the long holiday weekend following the unseasonably warmth that prevailed the middle part of last week. And temperatures here across Illinois, let alone the entire eastern portion of the country, dropped down to colder than normal readings. But even with that cool down, we still saw limited precipitation across much of Illinois as well as much of the Midwest. Coming up here, we are going to see highly variable temperatures continue. And while the next several days will continue to run slightly below normal here across Illinois and the Midwest, we will be then seeing temperatures dramatically warm up starting late this week and Thursday, Friday, and that continues over the weekend onto the much of next week as well. Temperatures turning unseasonably warm. In fact, it looks like temperatures could approach record levels by the early part of next week here in areas of Illinois and the Midwest, with high temperatures climbing up into the 60s, even potentially 7 degrees about 1 week from now. So roller coaster ride in temperatures, although temperatures will be quite volatile here coming up, such as has been the case here lately. We just do not see any kind of significant storm systems or significant precip here across the Midwest. So the generally drier pattern here of late looks to continue here as we end November and begin December.
Tough enough for us in our part of the world, although we don't have to really have the rain for any growing season here. But if you go further to the west, they really do need some rainfall for their wheat crop.
Yeah, especially Kansas down through Oklahoma and Texas. And bottom line, for the Southern Plains, hard red winter wheat belt, also no sign of any significant storm systems, at least over the next 10 days. So the dryness continues. And along with that, the well above normal temperatures, that will continue to increase evaporation rates here.
It means we really need to have a pretty decent wheat crop from the Southern Hemisphere. And I'm afraid that Australia's crop is in rotten condition.
Yeah, they certainly have seen the dryness here in their spring impact their yield. So as a result, their production here is lowered. As harvesting of the crop continues here, at least no sign of any kind of major issues with harvesting or bog downs as we go through the next couple of weeks. Some slowdowns are also possible, or there will be slowdowns, it looks like, in Argentina as the pattern here is turning a bit more active here. Nothing extremely wet, but with the systems coming through, that'll likely keep winter wheat harvest progress on the slow side.
And we left Argentina and South America off for the very end and very, very short, but it appears that they're in pretty decent shape.
Yeah, they are here, and soil moisture reserves are adequate to abundant across a vast majority of Argentina, Paraguay, Uruguay, and upper Brazil. A few isolated dry pockets have developed in southern Brazil, but they have opportunities for rain, so that should improve the situation there.
Thanks so much, Mark.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Chesapeake Energy. He's in Chicago, Illinois, up on the 23rd floor of the Boeing building there, looking down on the loop. Thanks to him for joining us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report, and to you, too, for listening to the program. You can always hear it again on our website at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. Have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.